And welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan, and I'm live here in the KRCB studio with my co-host, Gary Carnevale, our engineer, Mary Moore Campagna, on the boards this evening. And we have a very exciting show for you. We are going to chat with a wonderful, wonderful photographer and transvariant artist, Karen Massing, talking about her wonderful work, which includes a lot of self-portraits and also portraits of the international court system. Joy Anagnostis from Out West Dance is also joining us this evening. She will be talking about teaching the LGBT community to two-step and line dance at her group's fabulous monthly parties held in Sebastopol. First up, let's go to Greg Moralia and the Outbeat News.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, March 18th, 2012. The Southern Poverty Law Center just added 10 new organizations to its growing inventory of anti-gay hate groups it monitors and reports about. Save California of Sacramento is among the new groups. Their website promotes, quote, "Not Born This Way," a campaign for getting the supposed facts into schools. It opposed California's Fair Education Act, which requires inclusion of LGBT history in school lessons. The organization's president, Randy Thomason, said before the law went into effect, quote, "The clock is ticking for dads and moms to rescue their children from unnatural and unhealthy homosexual, bisexual, cross-dressing role models," end quote. Other groups added to the list include Mission America, Parents Action League, the Jewish Political Action Committee, Repent of Burn in Hell Ministry, Public Advocate for the United States, True Light Pentecost Church, Sons of Thunder, Tom Brown Ministries, Windsor Hills Baptist Church, United Families International, and You Can Run, But You Cannot Hide. The Southern Poverty Law Center is dedicated to fighting hate and bigotry and to seeking justice for the most vulnerable members of our society. They define a hate group as having beliefs or practices that attack or malign an entire class of people, typically for their immutable characteristics. And in Minnesota, one of the state's most well-known politicians, former vice president and Democratic presidential nominee Walter Mondale, is organizing a campaign to defeat the ban on same-sex marriage put on the state's ballot. Mondale is a former state attorney general, and he got his law degree in the Minnesota Public University system after being born and raised in the state. He went on to serve as vice president to Jimmy Carter and ran as the Democratic Party's nominee against President Ronald Reagan. The legal duo said they are mobilizing law firms, in-house legal departments, and academic institutions as part of what they've labeled Lawyers United for All Families. It's a partnership with Minnesotans United for All Families, which is the primary organizer fighting the proposed amendment to the state's constitution. And in Omaha, Nebraska, the city council voted 4-3 approving an ordinance which would protect LGBT residents against bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The bill, which failed to pass in October of 2010, drew hundreds of concerned citizens for and against the ordinance to city council meetings. The ordinance would apply to employers, employment agencies, job training programs, labor groups, public accommodations, and businesses contracted by the city, this according to the Associated Press. Mayor Jim Suttle said he would sign the bill into law if the city council passed it. Omaha is the city that welcomes diversity, embraces fresh ideas, and is open for business to everyone, said the mayor. Allowing discrimination in our city is wrong for our citizens and our businesses. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, March 19th at 7 p.m., the Sonoma County Pride Planning Committee will meet at the Marshall House, 15010 Armstrong Woods Road in Guerneville. Everyone's invited to attend and help in this year's Pride event planning. And on Tuesday, March 20th at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 7 p.m., a new volunteer orientation is scheduled at the Food for Thought Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank at 6550 Railroad Avenue in Forestville. And on Thursday, March 22nd at 7 p.m., the Positive Images Youth Small Group Night will meet at 2230 Lomitas Avenue in Santa Rosa. And also on Thursday at 6:30 p.m., the men's peer-to-peer HIV group will gather at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. On Friday, March 23rd at 7:30 p.m., The PFLAG Santa Rosa Support Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Saturday, March 24th, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Food for Thought AIDS Food Bank Drive will happen at the Mendocino Safeway and the Pacific Market in Sebastopol. And finally, on Saturday, from 1 to 5 p.m., the Main Street Shuffle Texas Hold'em Tournament will happen at the Main Street Station, 16280 Main Street in Guerneville. Proceeds will benefit the Russian River Sisters Planning Committee and Sonoma County Pride. A buy-in costs $50 and rebuys are $20. Cash prizes are available for first through third place winners. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Michaela Kennan.
And Gary Carnevale. We're here tonight with photographer Karen Messing, who identifies as transvariant, and has started cross-dressing early in grade school. And as Mike, how you started off life, you studied photography at the Academy of Photography, the Academy of Photographic Arts, but you do make your living in a different way. And during the past 5 years, Karen has blossomed into a talented and prolific photographer. Karen's work will be part of this year's San Francisco Pride celebration. Welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
When did you first start cross-dressing, and how did it make you feel?
I'm not sure if I can really answer when I first started cross-dressing. I do remember as a young boy having a fascination with my mother's clothing. So I wouldn't call it cross-dressing, but I think I would call it more the idea that you were stealing clothes, as I like to call it, initiating them into your life.
And there you go. And what gave you the courage to eventually come out as transvariant to family and friends?
Well, actually, it was about 5 or 6 years ago, a slight medical scare came up. And at that time, I kind of looked at my life and said, I just don't want to look back upon it and say I should have. And with that, I joined a cross-dressing club in the East Bay, something called Diablo Valley Girls, DVG. And they met 2 to 3 times a month. Wanting to go out a little more, I did go out one Saturday night, and that's how I found the San Jose chapter of the court system. I asked if I could return with my camera because the beauty of it, the artistry, the color, the pageantry was great. They agreed, and they liked the portraits, and next thing I know, I started becoming a little bit of the photographer du jour for as they introduced me to more and more chapters.
So when did you first become interested in photography and thought that you could make it a career?
I tried making it a career. In 1969, I was at Ohio State, and there was a lot of student unrest. And that was something I just thought should be documented, so I bought a camera at that time. And then I came out to California about 70, 71, and started with Academy of Photographic Arts. Tried weddings, bar mitzvahs, and so on. But that wasn't me. That wasn't me. So it always was a hobby. And then it stayed that way until my son started playing baseball, and then it became a very serious hobby. When he stopped playing baseball, I was like a junkie with no pusher all of a sudden. Mm. So that's when, you know, gift from above, I found the court system.
And Karen, I'm going to ask you, you describe as transvariant. So I'm going to ask you to give us a definition of that so the audience will understand the term transvariant. And then morph into, at what point did you allow Karen to kind of become your creative force?
Oh, that's a good question. I keep going back to about 1983, 1984. You would go to the libraries, you'd look through those little card catalogs, and you look up transvestism. You kind of had a feeling that's what it was. You would always find this in a book that had a title that said something of either deviations, abnormalities, you were between child molestation and bestiality or something. And the pictures you would see were enough to make you hang yourself. If this is my life, take me now. As the years went on, people got a little more understanding of it or what it was. You became a cross-dresser. You were just someone that had wanted to dress in the clothes of the opposite sex. And then they divided that into so many categories, fetish mm-hmm. cross-dresser, this cross-dresser. And it wasn't until I started realizing that I just enjoyed wearing the clothing. Perhaps it's just part of me. The trans variant, I think, kind of came on, if I was to put a label on myself, if they needed one, I would call it like a transgenderist. Sometimes I just choose to present myself as male. Sometimes mm-hmm. I choose to present myself as female, as much as I can at 6'2", 220. Without realizing it, from just going to that first night where I took pictures of the drag queens, I was just looking as a place to go that was safe. It was advertised as LGBT. Well, I'm in the T. I'm allowed to be here. I had no idea it would take this, that people would all of a sudden say, we like this work. This is good work. Perhaps as a guy, I've done everything I'm supposed to, of being that nose to the grindstone, hardworking, owned business, knock on wood, did well. Maybe Karen was the side that just said, now we can go have fun, you know. Mm-hmm. And Mike takes very good care of Karen so she can go out and have fun and do all these shootings.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's actually a nice balance. I mean, it's a real nice relationship between the masculine and the feminine.
It is. I realize this on days like this where I'm supposed to come down here, and you start thinking the whole day, this is a Karen day. Mm-hmm. Let me take the time, get presented, and so on. And Mike doesn't do it as much as Karen does, and Karen likes doing that.
Good. Now, you have a son.
Yes.
And his name is Eric.
Yes.
And you work with him.
Yes.
Good, good. And he's very, very accepting of all of this.
He has, he's a gift from the heavens. I finally came out to Eric, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, with the idea that he lives with his mom, and he would want to come over and see me and hang out. And I found myself doing something like saying, maybe not this weekend, buddy, because I didn't want to go through the time of hiding the 12 wigs, the 400 shoes, all the makeup, and make the house look very guy-oriented, you know. So I finally came out to him with the idea that, like, I don't want to build this wall, but between us, this is who I am. He asked very pertinent questions, went to a meeting or two with me, and then when one shooting came up, I said, would you like to go do it? And he said, yeah. And I believe it's opened up his eyes completely to mm-hmm. what the LGBT community is, and quite accepting. It's not even a matter of accepting that this is just how it is. This mm-hmm. is our
this is part of our world.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Very good.
Yeah.
And self-portraits are an important part of your portfolio. Does Eric help you with those portraits? And why are they so important to you artistically?
Because they're fun. Eric and I will spend time looking on YouTube of, oh, here's somebody that did this Photoshop thing. Here's how we did this. We'll see a poser, you know, something that we like. And then we'll start spending 2, 3, 4 hours work. How can we do something like this? We'll start scouting out scenes and stuff. One of my favorite pictures he did of me was that one on the postcard. We jokingly call that my mom and her dog. And when everybody says there's no dog, he kind of jokes, I don't know how to break it to you, there's no mom either. And I love that picture. And it a whole day running around San Francisco to find the brick wall that he wanted. He mm-hmm. had that in mind. Wake up early one Sunday morning. Let's get Karen all spiffied up. Go into the city. We dragged lights. And it was just 8, 10 hours of having a lot of fun doing photography.
Making magic.
That's great fun.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, we're looking at a picture of Karen dressed wonderfully, and she is taking, you've seen these leashes that have just the dog harness that people walk around, and there's no dog attached, but it's the dog harness. And so this is the zany picture that does not include the dog nor the mom. But your imagination puts it all together, and of course, it looks like a great shot.
So. It's a great picture. I just recently had it made into a banner for the house.
Oh, there you go. Right.
It's easier than painting the walls.
So you mentioned Photoshop. How has that software changed your work and changed how you
work
as a photographer?
Unbelievably. It first started with the idea that a lot of the folks in the court system, they look fantastic, but like all of us, we're picking up an extra ring every year. We're getting a little older. First, it was just ways of, well, let's take a wrinkle or two away. Let's add a little more color to the eyes. Let's do this. Let's do that. And then you just find out there's so much more you can do with it. Change backgrounds, lighting techniques, skin texture, and you just have fun with it. The end result for me always when I shoot a portrait of someone is hopefully that picture will look exactly how that person feels that they look. And a lot of the drag queens are a little theatrical, so they don't mind the extra pizzazz on it. You know, I've gotten some very nice compliments back on pictures.
And drag kings also.
They like them, too, because they even look a year or two younger.
Give us a sense of the first time that you went out as Karen and had your work on display.
Oh, I sometimes think there's a higher power that looks after us. There was an exhibit in San Francisco called You Look Familiar, where they wanted you to send in pictures that showed how people of the same group, organization, whichever, look familiar to each other. I sent in pictures of drag queens. They were selected. I had them under Mike's name, and I had to call up there and really say, look, if you're going to exhibit them, they're really not Mike's work. They're Karen Massing's, and I had to explain that to them. They said, fine, we'll put them up as Karen Massing. So, okay. A week and a half later, they said, by the way, we're having a Meet the Artist night. Have Karen show up. And I'm like, what?
Karen's debut.
And the two guys that live down the street from me, great friends. They've been with each other for 20-some years. Really my pride coach and spiritual coach. You know, like, be proud. This is Karen's work. It's being selected. It's being exhibited. People are going to come in to see you and talk about it. And it really, really helped. And they kind of dragged me down. I was nervous, but like a little kid, I could run away from them and talk to people and then come back to get my batteries charged. And then the time in Petaluma and now the one coming up at the library, the Harvey Milk Branch. I'm looking forward to it. They're less scary, but I would have never thought years ago where if I could put on a pair of heels and walk out in the backyard and just hope the NASA satellites didn't see me, next thing I know now, it's Karen's a Google search, which I never would have thought happened.
Mm. That's amazing.
So describe, for those listeners who don't know about the international court system, describe that for them and talk about working with its members.
The international court system, according to Wikipedia, is the second largest LGBT charity in the world. And they just, they work hard to just raise funds any way that they can, through either fundraisers and bars, through their coronations, where one regime steps down and honors the new one coming in. And I'm just very fortunate that they kind of welcome me into their fold, to a point that when I do show up, there's people like, hi, Karen, taking their picture a second, third, fourth time. They're a fantastic group, and I was fortunate enough to be asked by Queen Nicole, who's the Queen Mother of the America, in charge of the whole organization, to come down and shoot her fifth anniversary in San Diego, as well as the San Diego coronation. I was just blown away at everything that they do, even the sacrifices, the personal sacrifices, financial and time, that everybody in that group puts out just under the name of charity. It's amazing.
And what causes, then, do you help support?
That was something you would probably have to ask each one of the individual mm-hmm. groups, but I would definitely say it's an incredible percentage of LGBT charities and causes, yeah.
I would imagine the international aspect of it is a wonderful dimension.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. people from all over the globe.
Well, not all over the globe, but in San Diego, I did meet folks from Canada, and I did meet folks from Mexico, and as well as Massachusetts, Florida, New York, Kentucky. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, well, that's all over the globe. I mean...
Almost. Almost.
But it was started here in San Francisco, actually.
According to, right, the first one through Jose mm-hmm. Was started in San Francisco. The year slips my mm-hmm. mind at the moment.
I think really early. I think
40-some years ago, if not
yeah,
more.
Yeah, yeah, late 60s, late yeah. 60s, yeah. if not earlier, when people were getting arrested. I think there's a famous photograph of Jose getting arrested because they had these balls, but... dressing as a member of the opposite sex was illegal.
Okay.
So at various times they would crack down in San Francisco, and Jose was arrested. He was the first empress.
Right.
So talk about some of the amazing folks that you've met at coronations.
Oh, we don't have enough time.
And they've gotten to photograph.
The first one I met was Ava Grabmore. She was the empress of San Jose. That first night I went to shoot, I took pictures of everybody, and I sent them back, but I did not send Ava's back. And I get an email saying, I'm the Empress of San Jose. Well, I'm the Wizard of Oz. I have no idea what that means. And that's when I found out about the different titles they have and so on. Ava loved her work so much that she was the one that really got me into, oh, you have to photograph this group, you have to photograph that group. She and I have remained such good friends that now anytime she's going to be at a coronation, and she'll call me and ask if I'm shooting. And if I am, she'll bring five or six changes of outfits just to... there's probably only five or six times I shot her, but I have over 30 portraits of her.
That's
30
wonderful.
Different outfits, yeah. And then I also met a wonderful person, Vivian Lee St. Michael, who was the Duchess of Alameda. I believe I'm not sure which number, maybe Duchess 818. And we've become really good friends. And she's always been helpful if I, how about this, or, you know, and makeup tips, friendship and stuff. What has happened, as a little side note of my travel through the court system, is... somewhere along the line, I had no idea what the LGBT community was. And years ago, if someone would have asked me how I felt about same-sex marriage, I would have just said, you know, however, that's fine. Because it didn't have a name to it, it didn't have a face to it. Now it has a face to it, because I've met so many folks that have been together for a long, long time. And now what's being denied or being fought for is something I can fully understand. It made me actually go out for the first time and hold up a sign during an election time.
Good. So, thank you for that.
I owe the court that, by all means. I mean, that was an eye-opener for me.
You have a show coming up in San Francisco.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
A big show. Everybody come. The San Francisco Library is going to be putting up at least 30 of my pictures, around 30 of them, I think, at the Harvey Milk Library, the Eureka Valley branch. It's going to start on May 12th and run to about September 15th, I think. But on Wednesday night, May 16th, I'll wait while everybody gets a piece of paper and a pencil.
Very good.
Wednesday night, May 16th, from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we're hoping to have just a great 2 hours, meet the artists, but really just celebration of the court system and a few pictures that I took.
Excellent. Yeah. How many people attend these kinds of events?
Well, the last one where I met Gary, thank God he came because that meant total 14 showed up. No. But that was on the Saturday that there was a rather important football game going on.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
Right.
The time that we had one at City Hall, that was pretty well attended. I think the library is really going to promote this with the folks that they have on their list and so on. Again, I'm just so happy that they selected my stuff and they're going to do that. I sure hope there's a nice turnout because there's a great story told in these pictures. There's a story of just not only the pageantry, not only the creativeness of a lot of the folks, but what else I picked up over the four years. I never really learned pride in the cross-dressing community. It's a rather shameful. If it's too much, you hang yourself back up in the closet for a week or two or three. This really showed me what pride was. Everybody is just, you accept the cards you've been dealt. This is who I am. You embrace it. You love it. You go forward with it. If it wasn't for that, I would have been at home dressed like this talking to you on the phone. I wouldn't have made the drive up here.
Well, we're glad you came out.
Well, thank you.
Just absolutely
thank you.
Be here with us. But you're lovely. Look at you.
Oh, thank you.
Striking. My goodness. We can find your work online.
I do have a website, www.karenmassing.com, but I have to say with everything else I've been doing, it's rather old pictures. I hope to update it soon, but there's a few good pictures, of course. Yeah.
And folks can find out about the show in San Francisco on your website?
We're going to put a postcard up on the website for that, too, to let everybody know, by all means, yes.
Well, we really appreciate your coming out today, and it's always great seeing you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. This is, as I would tell people, this is the most fun I had with a dress on.
I want to know how many pairs of shoes you have in your closet.
I write stories for a lot of the different, way too many. If I was a size 9, I'd be broke. Thank God I'm a 13 wide, so they're pretty hard to find, but... Karen has overtaken three closets in the house now, and Mike's stuff is neatly rolled up over there when he needs it.
Very good. Well, we're just more than pleased to have you as Karen and you as Mike, you know, the force behind Karen.
Oh, thank
just
you.
Just with us tonight. Wish
thank
you the
you.
Very, very best, and we're certainly going to stay tuned for the developments as they happen down the road. Good luck with the show in San Francisco.
Oh, thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Wonderful. We'll be right back with Joy from Out West Dance after this little musical break.
I can see you got your eye on this old cowboy, and I can tell you never had one for your own. Oh, you never been around one. Now you're thinking that you found one. Well, it might be kind of fun to take him home.
You giggle every time that I say yes, ma'am, and I get this feeling if I held you tight. You'd be seeing his and hers, buckles, boots, and spurs, but that feeling you'll get over overnight.
Cause what you gonna do with a cowboy when that old rooster crows at dawn? When he's lying there instead of getting out of bed and putting on his boots and getting gone. What you gonna do when he says, honey, I got a half a mind to stay? What you gonna do with a cowboy when he don't saddle up and ride away? You see, it takes a special kind of woman
put up with the life a cowboy leads. Cause his boots are always muddy, and his beer drinking buddies, they'll camp out on your couch and never leave.
Don't even start to think you're gonna change him.
You'd be better off to try to rope the wind.
What he is what you got.
And he can't be what he's not. And honey, you can't hide him from your friends. So what you gonna do with a cowboy when that old rooster crows at dawn? When he's lying there instead of getting out of bed, putting on his boots and getting gone. What you gonna do when he says, honey, I got a half a mind to stay? What you gonna do with a cowboy when he don't saddle up and ride away? Yeah, what you gonna do with a cowboy when he don't saddle up and ride away?
And you're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa here. Support for KRCB comes from members and the Napa Valley Opera House, welcoming world-class artists and entertainers to the stage. Located in the heart of downtown Napa, this historic venue hosts political comedians The Capitol Steps on March 17th, Celtic musician Solas on March 18th, and saxophone great Branford Marsalis on March 29th. The Napa Valley Opera House. For a complete schedule, information available at nvoh.org or 707-226-7372. Also, support comes from our members and from Sonoma County Gazette, a monthly community newspaper written by readers and found at more than 600 locations throughout Sonoma County. Available all month at sonomacountygazette.com. And now, back to Outbeat Collage.
Thanks, Mary. And yes, welcome back to Outbeat Collage. We're here in studio tonight. Myself, my co-host Gary Carnevale, and most pleased to welcome this evening Joy, I'm going to mess your name up here, Anagnostis.
Anagnostis.
Anagnostis, you do pronounce that.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and I didn't catch your friend's name.
And my partner, Lisa Fiorelli.
Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show. Very glad to have both of you here. And Out West Dance, it's a partner and line dancing event that happens the third Saturday of every month in Sebastopol. Every night includes an hour and a half dance lesson. No experience or partner is needed. And you are the grand mistress of the event. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I started Out West Dance last year in April. And Lisa's really the grand mistress of the event, but I facilitate it. But
sounds great. So give us a sense of when and where you kind of took your first twirl on the dance floor, how it all got started.
Well, two-stepping. The first time I two-stepped was at the Rawhide in San Francisco back in 1989 and was just right around at this. I was around right at the start of when it blew up, the gay, lesbian, country western dance scene. And soon after that, I moved to Britain and was really sad and missed line dancing and missed two-stepping. And I had some friends there who had done it in San Francisco or London or somewhere. So I actually started teaching line dance and two-step amongst my friends, and then started teaching at a gay and lesbian. It was a national gay and lesbian country western dance weekend, and I started teaching that. It was called Midnight Cowboys, and we'd rent out a whole youth hostel, and it would be just like 200 gays and lesbians just dancing. It was really fun, and so that's where I did a lot of dancing. And then I moved back to the States in San Francisco in 1998 and started dancing in Oakland. It's a lot of dance.
And you live in Sebastopol now, but so you just moved.
We moved to Sebastopol a year and a half ago, and I'd been away from dance for a while, and I kind of had vaguely in the back of my mind, I was aware that there was no dance up here that I knew of, and had thought, well, maybe I'll get back into dance sometime and you know, maybe do an occasional dance. And various things transpired. I met a couple friends, and they were saying, oh, yeah, they really encouraged me to do it and start it right away, which I wouldn't have done it so soon. So I really am grateful to them for getting me to start as quickly as I did. And it's been great. It's really taken off.
Where do you think the appeal behind line dancing is?
Well, so what I'm doing is a mix of dances. One of the things is line dancing, but there's also the two-stepping, which is a partner dance. Waltz, country waltz, is a partner dance, and then the East Coast and West Coast swing. And I also do nightclub two-step, and there'll be an occasional salsa. So some people like it all, you know, both the partner dancing and the line dancing. Some people only like the line dancing. The appeal of line dancing usually is for folks who want to dance, want to move, love dancing in a group, but I don't know. You can kind of do your own thing a little bit more with a line dance. It's a little bit more individualistic, ironically, even though you're dancing in a group. The partner dancing is different. So in answer to your question, the appeal of line dancing, I think, is dancing with people in a group, but there's a certain amount of freedom that you have.
So talk about a typical night at Out West Dance. How many men, how many women, how many partners, how many single folks?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay, so I don't always know how many who's together. But so a typical night, what I start with teaching an hour and a half of lessons, and I always do a beginner lesson. So there's new people who have never danced before who come every night. And so I need to be prepared for whatever. I mean, it could be one new person, it could be 10 new people. So beginners are always welcome. And the first 45 minutes, I do a 6:30 to 7:15 class for beginners. And a lot of people who have come previously also, I mean, in fact, the class is mostly non-beginners who are there to practice and dance and also to help out, to help the beginners. So there's always a beginner lesson from 6:30 to 7:15. And then I'll do an intermediate lesson from 7:15 to 8. And that'll be maybe a line dance, maybe more advanced moves of one of the dances. And then from 8 to 10, it's just open dancing. I basically DJ and just bum, 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 you know, lots of dancing. And at this point, it's predominantly women. It's the Out West Dance is basically geared towards the LGBTQ community, but everybody's welcome. Straight people are welcome. It's completely open. That's part of my belief. And what I've really enjoyed is how dance can be such a community building and really fun, really expansive experience. So for me, you know, it's an open event. It's completely open event. At this point, it's predominantly women, and I don't know if that's just the nature of Sebastopol, and you know, I don't know why that is. I'm trying to do more outreach to the trans folks and gay male community, but everybody's welcome.
Give us a sense of the kind of music you play. And
well, I play, you know, I really enjoy mixing it up, and I play country, but I also play Aretha Franklin. I played Leon Russell. I played Adele, K.T. Tunstall, Katy Perry. You know, I like to do a mix of classic country, some bluegrass. I play Alison Krauss, Katie Lang, Lyle Lovett. Did I already say that? Mm-hmm. You know, just a whole mix. You know, LaBelle, we play. You know, you can West Coast swing to LaBelle. You know, so because we do a mix of dance forms as well. You know, country two-step is a country western dance, and country waltz, you know, but you can two-step to Adele. So we two-step to Rolling in the Deep, and you know, it
works.
It totally works.
Like a great evening. Sure. Give us a sense of what your experience was in England. How was it to teach there?
Oh, it was great fun because what happened was The huge country western dance craze that hit the U.S. in the late 80s hit England after I was already over there and knew how to do line dance. So I was teaching line dance and two-step in the gay community, and then it got huge in the straight community. So I just started teaching. I set up a business. It was, like, so fun. I had people working for me, teachers working for me, and I used to put on this huge gay and lesbian, and it would get people from all over the country at this stunning old 200-year-old ballroom in Saltaire in, you know, North Yorkshire. It was so fun. And because I was an American, they loved me, and they, you know, I had the American accent, and they would just tease me and imitate my accent, which, whatever. Anyway, I loved it. I loved it. And Yorkshire, I lived in Yorkshire, so country music was huge in Yorkshire. But my dance business was mostly then in town, in Sheffield. I lived in Sheffield, which is in Yorkshire. It was a straight gig. You know, they were all. I did a dance night probably four nights a week at its peak, I think. And yeah, it was fun. It was way fun. I don't know. It was the best fun. So I kind of I think that's why I thought, well, I was aware here I'm moving to Sebastopol. I was like, maybe this will happen up here. It was just totally in the back of my mind. And then it happened.
And so talk about Wishman Hall and its connection
Wishman Hall is a gem. Sebastopol and Sonoma County is so lucky. It is a beautiful, and I'm lucky. I feel so grateful to be part of Wishman Hall and to be able to do these dances there. And it's a beautiful, really cute hall. It's got a great dance floor. It's wonderful. And Redwood Rainbows is, which Lisa and I actually started square dancing. We had never done that before, so we started that last year too. And this is the thing that I like about dance, is dance begets dance. And people who dance check out other dances, and I just love that. But anyway, Wishman Hall is owned and operated or managed by Redwood Rainbows, which is the... it's not predominantly, it's a gay and lesbian square dance club, but again, it's open to everybody. And that's having great success. It's hopping there. That's a lot of fun.
When did you start Out West Dance?
So I started Out West Dance last April. In fact, the birthday party, I don't know what we're actually going to do yet, but April 21st is our Out West Dance 1 year anniversary. So I hope to have a big celebration birthday party on April 21st. It happens to be the Apple Blossom weekend, too, so maybe that'll help.
Good timing.
Yeah.
So talk about acting as the DJ for every event. Do you have a playlist in mind when going in, and does it change while it's happening?
It certainly changes. I have a playlist, and I print it out, and I actually leave it for people to look at to get a sense of what songs I'm playing that night. And I do change it around. You know, I think the thing about being a good DJ is you're checking out the vibe in the room. You're looking at what dances people can know, because again, every night is different. So there'll be some night where I've got people who really know the West Coast swing and love it, and other nights where people don't really know the West Coast swing. So essentially what I do is a playlist that includes all the dances, the two steps predominant, and then waltz, East Coast swing, West Coast swing, nightclub two-step, which is getting more and more popular. I'm going to have to start putting more of that in, that's a beautiful dance. Anyway, so I'll sort of, you know, see what the crowd is. And then I also let people request. I have a little request sheet, and they'll request line dances, or they'll say, can you play more nightclub two-steps? I'm like, okay, I'll get that in. So yeah, I think as a good DJ, you have to be completely responsive to the crowd, which I really enjoy. I think that's the fun of that back and forth. It's great. So I love the music. I love DJing. And it's kind of hard because one thing takes away from the other. Sometimes I want to dance, but I also want to DJ well. So, you know, it's fun. It's a pull. But Lisa's always on the dance floor, though.
Being
an inspiration.
Describe some of these dances that people know. Line dancing, they know two-stepping, but describe the swing dances, East Coast, West Coast, how they're different, and the two-step nightclub.
Yeah, sometimes you can hear it in the music, but like if I were to play you an East Coast swing, it's a faster rhythm, and the West Coast swing is more bluesy. It's a sultry, more bluesy dance. It's a sexier dance. Nightclub two-step tends to be done to ballads and is pop, you know, sort of pop song. Let me think.
So give us some artists to go with the style. So you said,
well,
you,
like for example, a couple West Coast swings that I play, a couple songs to West Coast swing are Lady Marmalade, Meet Lady Marmalade, Voulez-vous coucher avec moi? So that's, is that the name of the song? I can't remember now. And Respect, those are East Coast, those are West Coast swings. And then I'll also play some country West Coast swings that not everybody will have heard of, but something more bluesy. East Coast swing's going to be more rock and roll. I'll play rockabilly, a lot of rockabilly for that. What else? So what else did you ask me about? Nightclub two-step. I'm having a little block here. I play this. Actually, it's a really sexy Spanish song, which I have the track here. But it's a song that you can also Argentine tango to. It's like, it's again a sultry kind of, you know, it's a 4-4 count. And, but it's a slower, swayier sort of song, music. So I'm not really describing the dance so much, I guess, but I am. Yeah. So
the night, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Bebe song is,
number 13, but you'd have to cut in, about to just speed things up. You should cut in like 33 seconds.
Oh, we're going to listen to that. And so the name of the song is...
I can't
speak. My Spanish is awful.
Siempre... I don't have it in front of me.
Oh. Looks like Siempre me que dará. Boy, we probably really messed that up. But
you will always be with me.
Oh, there you go.
Hey,
thank you, Mary.
And it's explicit. Apparently it's explicit if you speak Spanish, but I don't know. So.
Sure.
Cómo decir que me partes mil las esquinitas de mi hueso, que han caído los esquemas de mi vida, ahora que todo era perfecto, y algo más que eso, me sorbiste el seso y me desciende el peso de este cuerpecito mío que se ha convertido en río, de este cuerpecito mío que se ha convertido en río. Me cuesta abrir los ojos y lo hago poco a poco, no sé a qué aún te encuentre cerca. Me guardo tu recuerdo como el mejor secreto, qué dulce fue tenerte dentro. Hay un trozo de luz en esta oscuridad para prestarme calma, el tiempo todo calma, la tempestad y la calma. El tiempo todo calma, la tempestad y la calma.
Okay, so give us a little sense of what you would be talking about now, is it?
Okay, well, I actually can't hear the music, but this is the song. I think it's playing right now, right?
Okay, we're going to get you a set of headphones here so you can...
Okay, yeah, so this is a nice nightclub two-step. And it's like a quick, quick, slow, quick, quick, slow. And what you're doing is a back step, side. And you're dancing with somebody else. And just a back step, slide, back step, slide, back step, slide. And then you'll do some moves like a turn or whatever. This is just a very swayy, I can't think of the right words, romantic, sensual kind of dance.
You can feel it, though. You can feel like you can just move into a groove. And
you can feel it in the music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's actually a graceful dance. Yeah, the West Coast swing will tend to be a little bit more sultry and sexy, and this is more sort of, yeah, sensual, graceful. So, and this is the sort of stuff, to me, this is play. Like, I want, you know, my idea about, I'm trying to facilitate, like, play, just people playing. A lot of people are very scared or concerned about partner dance that has steps. And we're, like, focusing on the, you know, yeah, you learn some basic steps, but then let's play. Let's just, you know, feel the rhythm, feel the dance. It's like getting people to hear the rhythm in the music and then just play around. So
that's an education, getting them to sensitize themselves to that.
I think a lot of people are naturally have it and forget. Like, I'm trying to get people out of their head and into their feet and into their body. So we actually, when I teach dance, I always start with them as individuals moving, not with each other, so that we're just sort of moving, feeling, like feeling the rhythm. I think we have this and we lose it. And so that's my fun part. It's like, let's play as adults. Let's play as a community. And
absolutely.
And you're a real teacher. I mean, how did you come to that point? How did you decide, I'm going to teach dance?
Okay, so that I fell into. I did used to teach self-defense, and I taught, being a good feminist in the 80s, I taught self-defense, and I was in Taekwondo, I loved movement. And then when I got into the dance, I fell into the teaching, and yeah, I just love it. Love it.
Did you always have a sense of yourself as a dancer?
No. I was the kid who did not wiggle dance. Mm. Yeah, I was really uncomfortable dancing as a kid. So I felt like I personally needed the steps to sort of start to dance. You know, and yeah, I don't know. Maybe that had to do with being like a butch lesbian. I didn't have a butch, you know, as a teenager, I was not out. You know, I was like, so I don't know. Maybe that's. I was not comfortable dancing. I was comfortable in karate. That's mm-hmm. how I learned to move, mm-hmm. you know.
So. I'm wondering if it was maybe as you became more comfortable with yourself and, you know, it all kind of came out around the same time that you started to maybe integrate. I'm getting way into, you know, some deep stuff here. But I'm thinking of it as a natural progression from the movement that you would do in the Taekwondo or the karate. It's still being in your body. It's still having a sense of how your body moves and what you can do with it.
Definitely. With music added, and I think that was the beautiful sort of coming together of, and that's what I also think that I love to provide. Like I see myself as just sort of facilitating this kind of group experience where we're taking playfulness and a bit of romance, a bit of fun, movement, music, you know, within an inclusive community, like, whoa, that mm-hmm. is so fun. So, yeah, I just feel really grateful to be able to be doing this. This is great. You know, it's just a lot of fun.
Is there a charge for the lesson?
There's a charge for the, it's $10 for the entire night. So the lesson is, there's 3 hours, an hour and a half of lesson, and then 2 hours of dance. So essentially, it's a one package thing. The lessons are included in the $10 charge.
That's great. I have a note here that indicates you were once commissioned to choreograph a line dance about hand washing.
Yeah, that was fun too. That was really fun. Lisa and I actually choreographed that together. So this was Kaiser in Santa Rosa, wanted to do a flash mob of at the hospital, just educating people about the proper hand washing techniques. So then I look on YouTube and there are a zillion hand washing videos of dance. Like, people have done this a lot, like in the Philippines, all over. So then they had a particular track in mind. And so then we choreographed a line dance, and then I went to Kaiser and taught it to everybody. And then we did a flash mob. It was fun.
So how many people?
How many people danced? Mm-hmm. Maybe 40 or 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to teach them that dance?
I went for, you know, I don't think I had everybody. I taught a group, and then the next week I went and taught a group, and I think they had some practice sessions themselves.
Excellent.
It was really fun.
And it's on YouTube?
It isn't on YouTube, and it really should be on YouTube. I'll find out. They were going to try to get it on YouTube, and I don't know what happened.
Oh, right.
But you can bet that they'll never wash their hands without dancing again. Always remember that, right?
I actually learned a lot of things about hand washing, just choreographing it, that I never knew.
Well, give us a sense of what you do when you're not out on the dance floor or behind the turntable.
We're spending time in the garden. We're trying to build a garden. I also do bookkeeping. That's my other job. Yeah, that fits really nicely with dance. I actually know other people who are dancers and bookkeepers. It's funny, in Oakland. It's like, wow, this is a weird thing.
So do you enjoy Sonoma County? What is it?
We love Sonoma County. Yeah. Never looked back.
Wonderful. And how long were you in the Bay Area? You said about after you moved back from England?
Well, Lisa's been there quite a long time. She was there since the 80s. I moved to Oakland from England in 1998, the very end of 1998. Mm-hmm. And then we moved here in 2010.
What took you to England, just very briefly?
Well, I was traveling and I got in a relationship. Uh-huh. Anything else? Do you? Is that
no, that's
enough said.
No,
yeah.
We're good.
It was a girl.
That's fine.
But then it was England, too. England's an amazing place with really bad weather, but otherwise it's an amazing place.
Right. Weather and food, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they have good fish and chips.
Well, yeah. Pub food.
You have to learn to like what, yeah. I mm-hmm. learned to really like certain things, like
right.
fish and chips.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get into Eccles cakes?
I did. I like Eccles
I
cakes.
I love Eccles cakes. I've been to England. That's one of my heart places,
My
too.
Thing is I dip Eccles cakes in tea. I don't know if that's the done thing, as they say in Britain, but I like that.
That's all right. Just you had a great time with the people there,
the Brits.
I did. I love the people.
Group.
It was really that was the hardest thing, you know, leaving the media, the radio and TV. Love BBC Two, and I love BBC Radio 3, and I love the Guardian newspaper, and I love the people. There we go.
Uh-huh. And the Eccles cakes
and certain things.
Well, how can we find out more about Out West Dance?
Oh, thanks for asking. The Out West Dance has a website that is going to be improved. But right now it is outwestdance.com. And then I have a Facebook page, Out West Dance Sebastopol.
Okay.
And we have a dance the third Saturday of every month. I'm booked through 2012 at least. And then I also do a dance practica, which is like a glorified dance lesson. I try to fit one of those in a month. Somewhere. And the next one of those is March 31st, also at Wishman Hall. And that's basically a glorified dance lesson. I spend 3 hours teaching dance and coaching and having people practice and playing around. It's a little more informal.
And where is Wishman Hall?
Wishman Hall is at 465 Morris Street in Sebastopol. It's near Sebastopol Town Center.
Okay, excellent. Well, we're certainly glad to have both of you here, glad to know about Out West Dance and that it's not just Out West. It's certainly for all kinds of people, all kinds of levels, and all kinds of enjoyment. So,
yeah, well, thanks for
thank
having
you for
us.
Having
thanks
us.
For coming.
Wanted to thank everyone for being with us this evening. Thank you for listening to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts, and certainly do hope that you'll tune in every Sunday, 8 p.m. right here, KRCB Community Powered Radio. Next week, Jeff Besham and Greg Moralia will host Outbeat Now, and then Gary and I will return on Sunday, April 15th for another edition of Outbeat Collage. You can listen to our previous shows by going to our website at www.outbeatradio.com. Good night. Have a great week, folks, and we'll be back next month.
2, 3, 4. Ooh. Better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. I came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. I felt a little fear upon my back. I said, don't look back, just keep on walking. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. When the big black horse said, look this way, he said, hey, will you marry me? Ooh-hoo.